Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th of November, Anno Domini 2010. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Drink some booze. Here we go. On Tuesday, Apple finally released the highly anticipated iOS 4.2, not the one for Cisco. While the attention around iOS 4.2, not the one for Cisco, has been focused on the enhancements and new features, particularly for the iPad, the update also fixes more than 80, that's 80 vulnerabilities in the iPhone, iPod, and iPad. It is common knowledge that iOS 4.2 introduces features to the iPad like multitasking, or at least Apple's pseudo version of multitasking, a unified email inbox, and the ability to organize apps by grouping them into folders. It also includes a variety of enhancements aimed at IT admins that make it easier to manage and protect iPads connected to a corporate network. The massive barrage of security updates, however, flew in under the radar. It's not that Apple is unwilling to admit that there are security issues, but Apple policy dictates that the vulnerabilities not be publicly disclosed until the patch is available. An Apple webpage detailing the security updates in iOS 4.2 explains, for the protection of our customers, Apple does not disclose, discuss, or confirm security issues until a firm investigation has occurred and any necessary patches or releases are available. So now that iOS 4.2 is out and the patches or releases are available, it is safe to let you know that your iPhone, iPod, and iPad has been virtually Swiss cheese from a security standpoint. The iPhone and iPad are both now protected against more than 80 vulnerabilities, many with critical security implications that most users were not even aware existed. For example, viewing a PDF file is a risky task on pre-iOS 4.2 devices. Viewing a PDF document with maliciously crafted embedded fonts may lead to an unexpected application termination or arbitrary code execution. If you have surfed the web on an iPhone or iPad, you might be interested to learn that a vast array of flaws exist that could allow an attacker to execute arbitrary malicious code on your device. There is also a vulnerability which releases your surfing history. These are just a few examples. Many of the more than 80 flaws addressed in iOS 4.2 have very serious security implications. While the general public wasn't aware of these flaws, attackers probably were. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's iOS 4.2 update. And your choices are, did it? We'll do it very soon. Apple devices don't have security problems. Doesn't seem to run on my Cisco device. Could not care less. Now, so far we've got some 30-odd, and I know many of you are very odd, people who have voted could not care less is number one. I suspect a great deal of our listeners don't have Apple devices of any sort. But when you're done with that poll, I know you'll have more to say. So check the yellow box underneath the poll and click on the link there. Give us your opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And enter our opinion. We have four so far. Most of them are very, very, very uninterested. And our question to you, of course, if you'd like to call up and talk about the shock at any security vulnerabilities in any Apple product ever, that would be great. But also, we'd be interested in knowing a couple of other things. First, well, let's start with did you go out on Black Friday yesterday?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, did you, folks?
And if you did, what was your best deal?
And what experience. Did you get?
We'd like to know what your experiences were. That would be kind of fun, too. And in addition, don't forget, if you and your significant other are listening to the show together, what a great time to call up and talk about the thing you'd like for Christmas.
Yeah. Ooh, good idea.
Particularly if it's computer related. I mean, if you want socks, don't call. Seriously. All right. We're going to go right to the phones. Our first caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Good morning or good afternoon.
We don't care.
I got a
anything
couple of things. One, I've been running Thunderbird. Okay, I'm not sure what version, but I kept getting flashes telling me to upgrade, so I updated it to 3.15, and I don't like it at all. They changed the main page, and I can't get back to the inbox. Every time I open up an email, I'm having lots of problems. So I'm wondering, is there any way I can go back to the old version, or am I going to have to download a whole new version, my old version, and somehow transfer my...
So you're saying that when you downloaded this update to Flash through Thunderbird, did you get it as a in an email?
No, as I opened up my old version, it came on and said I should update. I had a window in the front,
and,
you know, on the screen, and said I should update it.
And now when you try to go into your inbox, you are sent somewhere else?
No, I can get in the inbox, but once I open up an email, it's very difficult to go back to the inbox. I have to keep maneuvering everything to get back to the inbox. It's very...
I think it's in Thunderbird, the way you set up your view.
Do you, do you have it set to open the message in a new window or in the message viewer?
Well, that's just it. I can't open anything up after I open up one email.
Then you close that email window, and it should take you right back to your inbox where you were.
Well, one of the things that you do in Thunderbird is you can have it open email either right in the same window you were in or in a brand new window.
And that's probably what he's seeing is the
Well,
brand
let's
new
ask
window.
Him that. When you open it up, do you get a different window?
Right. When I open up an email, I get the mail on the screen, okay, but I cannot get back. There is no tab to go back to the inbox.
Right, and if you close that window, do you see the Thunderbird window behind it again?
No, I do not. If I close it, it goes back to my desktop.
Sounds like you're closing Thunderbird and not closing that message.
Yeah.
When you click on a message, it's opening that message in a brand new window.
It may not be. You get a choice in Thunderbird.
That's the problem. It opens it up. It opens up the full screen, becomes the email. And
okay.
I can't seem to
That is also a preference.
Anything to...
Right, but the question is, how do you change it?
Right.
Yeah, you have to go into Thunderbird preferences and find that setting. And Nick is looking in his and... I'll look in mine.
Okay, but is there a way I can go back to my old version?
Yeah, download the old version and reinstall it. Uninstall the new one and reinstall the old one.
But I don't know if it will convert his emails that have already been converted from, say, the 2.7 version, you know,
should
to 3.
Should be the same inbox file.
Yeah, okay, I can do that. My other
No. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's
What you want to do is hold the Alt key down and press F8.
F8.
And that should resize the screen for you.
Okay.
Take it out of full screen mode and put it into windowed mode.
Right. And then you need to... I don't have Windows Thunderbird right here. But the other thing you then need to do is change... Under Advanced Desktop Settings,
okay,
Window Management, and I think there's another one called Extra Actions, maybe, then you can turn off toggle full screen, essentially.
That may work.
But I don't have the Windows version of Mozilla here, so I can't tell you exactly of Thunderbird, so I can't tell you exactly where to do that. But the thing you're running into is that Thunderbird has opened in full screen mode and cannot be changed again easily. I mean, you can do it. It just doesn't happen easily.
Well, what I wanted to find out was that I wanted to go back to my old version, and what you say is what I kind of was afraid of. I would have to download the old version. It would install it over on top of the new version.
Well, you probably couldn't install it on top of the new version. Right. You'd have to uninstall the new version first.
Okay, now what
but
about
the reality
all my addresses?
Is,
would I lose all those?
Yes, you would. Mm-hmm. You'd lose everything. And that's why what I'm saying is if instead of opening an email, when you first open Thunderbird, you see your list of messages.
Right.
And you have the menus.
Right.
Go through the menus and look for toggle full screen mode. And I'm sorry, I can't lead you directly to it, but look for toggle full screen mode.
I also found in Thunderbird preferences under advanced, you can choose to open messages in a new tab, a new window, or the existing window.
Yeah, and do it in the existing window.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can try that. What I wanted to ask you also, Hotmail, is that very susceptible to crackers breaking in? My son.
Yes.
Everything.
Yes and yes.
Yeah, because Nigeria got into his Hotmail and email and sent messages to everybody in his email.
Yeah.
The biggest problem that you run into is that it isn't email, really. It's a web page. Yep. You're viewing your email as a web page. And so people can hide code because the web pages have code behind them.
Okay.
So it's very easy to put code in an email message, and they know people with webmail and Gmail and Yahoo Mail, all these web mail programs, can easily get infected by this code.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because he's got a lot of problems with that right now because they told him they were holding him for ransom and they wanted to have people send money and everything. So it was a real mess.
He needs to dance the security tango. That should clear out his machine, but it's not going to fix his Hotmail. That's just done.
Tell him to get a new Hotmail or go to a Gmail
account. Gmail. If he's got to have an online mail system, Gmail is a lot more secure. Not 100%, but more secure.
Okay.
Make all sure right, he's well, running a good antivirus and all of that stuff as well. All right. Thanks, Ron. That's a real problem we're seeing right now. A lot of people still on some of the older email programs like Hotmail, like AOL Mail, like a bunch of them. And they're not very secure. And so the opportunity for malicious activity is high in them. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Stan from Greece, New York. Welcome, Stan. What's your question?
Thank you. I have Windows XP 3rd edition, and I uninstalled my HP PhotoSmart C4300 before I took it over to Dave's to have him clean out my computer. When I got back to try to reinstall my printer, I got an error on there, and I notified HP, and they mailed me back something, some kind of a program, and I got it in an icon form, and I was able to go three-quarters of the way downloading the program from the disk, and then I get the error message on there. And then I go to try to figure out how to open up. I opened up the icon that they sent me to fix this thing, and I just got overwhelmed because I got lost and so I haven't been able to reinstall my my printer.
Well, now hold on a second. You got a couple of things going on here. HP sent you a file.
Yeah.
And when you double clicked and tried to download it, what happened?
I could only go so far with it, and then it says I had to I don't know exactly what it was telling me to do, because there was about five or six variations on that program that they mailed me that they sent me.
And but you downloaded it okay.
I downloaded part of the from the disk to put the printer back into my computer.
From what disk?
Yeah.
They sent you a disk?
I had a disk from the HP PhotoSmart.
Yeah, don't use that disk. It's very old. You should use the download link they sent you.
Oh.
Right. Don't use the disk at all. Forget the disk. So the code they sent you, you said you had trouble downloading that.
I had trouble trying to figure out what I was supposed to do on the instructions that it said.
Did your best bet with those instructions, and I'm afraid I don't know what the instructions are, nor do I know what the error message was that you had, but two things you can try. One is print those instructions out.
Yeah.
And email they sent you?
Well, if
they,
driver.
Oh, right, you don't have a printer. but follow those, well, if you have
Maybe.
To, write them down by hand.
Yeah.
And follow them step by step. Whatever they told you in the email to do. The only other thing you can do, the second thing to do, would be to bring it to somebody, back to Dave or whatever, the whole machine, and let him do it for you. Because without knowing what the error message is or where you're stuck, I'm afraid we can't lead you through it by remote control.
Well, I think the instructions that you gave me that not to use that disk, it's a whole different ball game now, because now I'll go back and just answer the one question. They say, do you have a disk? Put it in now.
Say no.
I can print without, I can still use that printer, but not through the computer.
Okay.
But I just wanted to make sure, that I had all of this stuff going and could print through the computer.
So you have another computer that can print to it?
No, the PhotoSmart lets you. Is that the one that lets you put the thumb drives in?
Yeah.
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 So you can use it standalone. You put a thumb drive in. It's got a USB connection.
Yeah, but
so you put a thumb
drive
in. There's a little panel on the front that lets you pick the picture you want to print.
Yeah, as an example, I took some recipes off there, and I couldn't put them on the printer.
Right.
From the internet.
Yeah. Well, definitely try answering no to I've got my own disk.
Because then it will download the most recent version from the internet, which is the best thing.
Yeah,
which is really what you want. Okay.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
Good luck, Stan.
Yeah, thanks.
We see that a lot, too. A lot of the directions that people tend to get from companies assume you have a level of knowledge that really a lot of people don't. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the post-Thanksgiving edition of Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Our next caller, John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi there, guys. Happy holidays to all of you.
And the same to you.
First of all, I don't do the Black Friday thing. I'm just the ATM.
Yeah.
And I've got an old Dell Dimension 3000, 2 gigs of RAM. It's Windows XP. It's 5, 6, 7 years old. It's a slow machine, but it's fast enough for what I need it for, and it works pretty well. And every once in a while, sometimes from something simple, just like from going on the browser from one tab to another, or if you read an email, you exit out and delete it and try to open another one, that hourglass will come up, and it'll be on there for like a minute or two. It's like the machine's doing, I know it does a lot of other things, but it just seems excessive. And it's like that for 2, 3, 4 minutes, and then, boom, it's back to normal. So the router logs seem pretty clear. I don't see anything there. So I brought up, msconfig, went to the system configuration utility. Under services, there was a box that was checked, and it says remote packet capture protocol, V.0, and then in parentheses, experimental, unknown manufacturer. I didn't like the sound of that, so I unchecked it and saved it. But what can you tell us about that?
Did it tell you who the manufacturer was, did you say?
No, it says unknown. I mean, there's other remote access stuff on there from Microsoft. I left that. But this thing, I don't know what it is.
Did it tell you the name of the program that runs it? Was it rpcapd.exe?
No, it doesn't tell me anything else. Let me see if I can open up something. No, it doesn't say anything else.
Well, if you can look at the running programs. You can look at the list of running programs.
Okay, where?
In the task manager. If you open up the task manager, there's three tabs, and one of them is the list of programs. And look for rpcapd.exe. And that's essentially WinPCAP. It's an open source library for packet capture and network analysis. It is installed as a Windows service, and it is a real thing.
Okay, that would be under processes?
Yeah.
Okay, now would you give it to me? I got a pencil now. Just one more time, then I'll let you go. Or even let me go.
RPC.
RPC.
APD. .exe.
Okay.
Remote Packet Capture APD. I don't know what the APD stands for.
Okay. All right, then I'll check that, and I'll leave that other thing on.
But that is legit. Well, wait a minute now. That's legitimate.
Okay.
So the real question is, what's causing your system to have this problem?
Well, it is old, and I expect the hourglass a lot of times, but not sometimes not for 2 minutes.
Well,
getting rid of an email, I know, you know.
Right. One of the things that I might suggest is take a look at your hard drive. How full is it? How old is it? It may be going. I hope you're doing backups regularly.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, you may want to check your RAM. What's that?
Memtest 86.
Memtest86.com.
Okay.
Download that and run it. Probably your best bet is to create the thumb drive and boot from that, or the CD and boot from that, and run it overnight to test your RAM.
I've heard you guys talk about that before.
Yep. And I would do that first. Because a system that old, there could be some other problems with it. And, of course, if that all comes up clean, you want to dance the security tango to make sure your system is clean.
Okay, I do that about once a week. I know I should do it more often, but I'm only around here once a week.
No, that's fine. That's more than most people do.
Yeah,
most of Sunday afternoons, get it started and watch the football game.
There you go. All righty. Thanks
a
lot.
Well, thanks for your help, you guys.
Yep,
appreciate
it.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, John. I'd love to hear somebody who actually does the tango fairly regularly. I'm very impressed by that. It's getting worse out there, and not everything. I'm working on changing the procedure a little bit, but there's nothing that gets everything, unfortunately. Some of them are so bad right now that as we've said before, guys like Steve and Dave take the hard drive right out and do it on another machine, and that's often the only way to clean it up. So we've tried in the past to create a bootable CD that did it, but that's hard. Anyway, our next caller is Zach from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Zach. What's your question?
I have two questions. One relates to drive indexing. You hear suggestions that you should, in your Windows, you should turn off drive indexing to make the computer perform faster, but they give you two choices. You can stop indexing on drive C or drive C plus all files and subfolders. Which one do you choose, if either?
I would choose the other.
Other?
Yeah, the drive C and all files and subfolders.
Okay.
And the reason is what drive indexing does is it lets you do that searching business faster. But if searching is not a major part of your time using your machine, then why take up all that time? Now, if your machine is fast enough, then you don't really notice it.
Okay.
But if your machine is slower, then, and it's a kind of a catch-22. If your machine is fast enough, you don't need it, but you wouldn't notice it. And if your machine is slow, you need it, but you really would notice it.
Okay. Got it.
There you go.
I have one other question.
Sure.
It's about laptop battery management. My Vio laptop has this utility where when it's on AC, you have the choice of letting the battery charge only to 50 or 80%, and they say that prevents battery degradation. And one, do you agree with that? And two, is there a utility I can load on my other laptops that would do the same thing?
Well, any of the laptops will come with an energy management program on it that you can sit there and tell it to warn you when it gets down to a certain...
I do not understand the 50 to 80%.
Yeah, well, take it right on, because that's back in the old days when the batteries used to have memory.
Okay,
a memory in them, and that you had to let them drain all the way down, so they didn't remember that burn-in spot.
Okay,
that they'd act up. So I mean, nowadays you can charge it all the way up, let it run all the way down or part way, and plug it back in and let it charge back up.
Yeah, the reality is that batteries are going to go eventually anyway, and you might as well have a full charge while you can.
Okay. All right, sounds very sensible.
Well, that would tick you off anyways. If you had it only 50%, you took it out, and you were going to do some work,
right?
And all of a sudden it dies because you only charged it up to 50%?
Right.
Well, I guess the idea is that if you're using it mostly as a desktop replacement, they're thinking that you might extend your battery life under those circumstances.
Well, then there is a general recommendation from most of the battery manufacturers that every month or so drain the battery completely.
Right.
and charge it completely to keep the chemistry working properly.
Right. Okay. But that's different from charging it 50% every day.
Right.
Okay.
And if you're going to use it as a desktop replacement,
take the battery out.
Take the battery out.
Yeah. Charge it up. Sense. Charge it up and set it off at a cool place.
Uh-huh.
And just leave it out. You don't need it if you're just going to leave it constantly on power.
I've run into a problem there, though.
What's
which
that?
Is, I did that with one of my laptops at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then I moved offices. Now I can't find the battery.
And depending on
that's
the laptop.
That's an organizational.
That's a definite problem, but it's mine, not.
And depending on the laptop, you've got that big gaping hole in the bottom now where the battery's
no,
supposed
to be. No, but
luckily
it does have a cover, so I'm all right there.
But those are a couple of ideas.
All right. Thanks for your advice. Have a good day.
You too, Zach. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling. I see people who always have their laptop sitting on their desk charged up, you know, plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell them, and half the time they don't believe me. But if you're gonna run it as a desktop, take out the battery.
Yeah, it'll last longer.
That's right. And you're right. Charge it up first. Set it aside. And then when you want to go somewhere, maybe the night before, you stick it back in and
just quick
sure.
check it. I boot it up and see where the battery is. It will lose some power.
Right, right. So you plug it in the night before and then you take it out. But if you're going to leave it there for weeks at a time, take the battery out.
It's
only going to last actually longer that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're just extending the longevity of it.
Yeah.
So a question for you, though.
Yeah?
Now, you said you did not venture out on Black Friday.
I stayed in my sweats all day. I didn't even get dressed. I was like one of the other guys who just called in. I was the ATM for the day.
There you go.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'd like to know, like you said, you know, some of our listeners out there, they're experiencing it. They were saying, though, what is it, the iPads, the iTouches, TVs.
Yeah, any electronics.
Were the big hot ones.
The Best Buy up here in Greece lost power 5 minutes before opening.
Yeah, and they were
and was delayed like 3 hours.
Oh.
They said it was a whole lot better than losing power 5 minutes after opening.
Yes, yes. Yeah. If you have to make a choice, that's the way. Unless, of course, there are electronic locks and people are just wandering around.
And, of course, I haven't seen too many of the, you know, so far stories where folks were at least, being trampled and all that, which is a good thing.
Yes, it's a very good thing.
I mean, I remember the days, you know, you'd sit there and see folks getting trampled all over the place and they're climbing over each other. I did see one where one guy did get pushed because they were pushed to get in, and he wound up going into, like, the side of this. They had a display. I don't know why you'd have this display. It was like one of these bins full of stuff right there at the entrance.
Yeah, that's kind of stupid.
As, you know, you're going to have a crowd. Move it back at least for the day. But, yeah, the guy wound up going into it, hit it right in his gut, knocked his air out of him.
Right.
He's leaning over. I thought he was going to fall into the bin.
Yeah, right.
I did see a neat website. You know how there was a lot of websites to track all the Black Friday
right.
deals? I saw one that tracked things that weren't really that good a deal after all. That one of them, one of the neat ones I saw was a Blu-ray player for $99.
Huh.
But it didn't have Wi-Fi in it. So the sell-up was to sell you the $80 Wi-Fi adapter.
Nice.
Or for $120, you got one with the Wi-Fi built in.
Nice.
Which was a better deal.
Much better deal.
Yeah.
The other thing, of course, is that Monday is Cyber Monday. The least productive work day of the year when everybody goes in.
I don't know if that is true anymore because so many people have broadband at home anymore.
That's true.
It used to be you'd go to work and use that really fast internet at work, but now we all have that at home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
yeah, right.
one study I
and if
read.
If you're going to do that at work, it cuts into porn time.
Yeah. One study I read said that 80% of people will check their work email when they're on vacation over holidays.
Yep.
I'm surprised it's that low.
I try very hard not to. I don't care. Yeah. I try very hard not to.
Mm-mm.
But sometimes it happens. You know, and my main two guys are magnificent, so I don't really worry about them. But every once in a while, there's something that I probably need to take care of. But both of them have my cell number, so
I got it pretty well covered there.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as systems in it, I mean, I've seen a number of laptops, and again, one of the other big hot items is the netbooks. Netbooks are huge. Netbooks are becoming more and more popular, and I mean, they're down to under $100. I saw one as a loss leader in one of the ads. You know, it was literally, I think, $99 or $97.
Yep.
For a nice little one. And I mean, you know, folks, well, I'll get that for my, you know, do all my stuff. And I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Well, that's the problem. Everybody thinks it's just a big computer in a tiny box, yeah. And it's not.
No, it has its limitations. You know, you sit there and tell, you got to inform folks. Yeah, you're going to be able to do this and you're going to do that. Do you want it as your main computer? No.
Right.
You still want to have, you know, whether it's a full-size laptop or a desktop to do your main stuff. This is just, so if you're going traveling or, you know, say you want, just surf the internet, maybe get some mail and do a couple documents. Okay, you're good at that. You're not going to do internet at lightning speed.
Right.
You'll get there as compared to your home one, but.
Right. And yeah, if I have one, I'm using it here for surfing the web. It's great for doing Google Docs. It's great. Even for doing, I'm running Linux. So even for doing OpenOffice and all of that, it's great. But it's not going to do high-end graphics. I'm not going to play a lot of online games on it. It's not for that. It's just not. And so if you're planning on that for Christmas, be very, very careful. All right, our next caller is Tom from Newark, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question? Or is that Newark, New Jersey? Tom, are you there?
Try it now.
Tom?
Yes?
Ah, are you from Newark, New York or Newark, New Jersey?
New York.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm the one that's always calling up about problems.
I know.
Okay, I bought a new Kimball, and I'm having trouble with the MP3 music.
You bought a what?
Kimball XD reader.
Okay.
And that takes MP3 music.
Right.
And I look through my collection, and I can't tell if any of them are MP3s or not. I wonder how you told.
Well, look at the extension, and that'll tell you what it ends in. If it ends in .mp3, it's an MP3 file.
No, no. And if I had a disc in my hand and I wanted to use it for the Kimball, I can't tell whether it's MP.
What kind of disc?
Yeah, what kind of disc it is.
Right. What kind of disc is it?
Well, I don't know.
Where did you get it?
Using whatever they write on the.
Where did you get this disc?
Covers are,
where did you get this disc?
Well, I probably got them from all different places.
Specifically, name one place you might have gotten one of these discs from.
Walmart.
So this is an audio CD.
Right.
They are not MP3s. It's an audio CD.
No, because I.
Right. So you need a program to convert the audio CD into an MP3. And typically, you'd use something like Windows Media Player or Winamp or iTunes. You need a program to rip that disc into the computer.
Well, I have a disc in a computer, and I was able to load it into the Kimball, but it wasn't an MP3.
Because you need a program to rip the disc into the computer, something like Winamp or Windows Media Player or iTunes, and you have to tell that program to import it as an MP3.
Well, see, here's the other problem.
It's in Windows Media Player in the computer.
Wait a second. When you rip a CD into your computer,
right?
You have a choice of what type of file you rip it to. It could be a WMA file. It could be an MP3 file. It could be an FLAC file. You tell Windows Media Player what type to do, and I believe it defaults to WMA.
I don't think that when I put those discs in, it ever asked me that.
No, it doesn't,
ask
you. You have to tell it ahead of time.
So what you need to do, well, what you need to do right now is hold on the line. We'll come back to you after we take a break. All right? Tom, stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Tom will be here. And you, it is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. We have Tom on the line from Newark. Tom?
Yes, I'm still here.
Excellent. Here's what you need to do. When you open up Windows Media Player, go to Tools, and then either Settings or Options, depending on which version you have. And you should see a new window with a whole bunch of tabs in it, one of which is Rip Music.
Yes.
About halfway down that little window is the RIP settings. And the first thing you'll see is format. If you pull down, it probably says Windows Media Audio right now. If you pull that down, choose MP3 instead. Say okay. Say apply, then say okay.
It doesn't show it in there. I did look.
What
does
it
show on MP3 in my music player?
What does it show?
Well, I forgot what was in there. But when I went to Amazon, they only sell the MP3 players in a download, and they want you to download a new software in your computer to download it.
To play the Amazon MP3s, you can download the Amazon player, but you can use your existing MP3 player.
Right. Windows Media Player will play MP3s.
Yeah, and, but I don't.
What version of Windows are you running?
According to Amazon, you can't download into Windows Media Player without their software.
It's the Amazon Download Manager, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to download their software. Then you can download it off the web, and then you can put it in the Kindle.
Right.
But what I was wondering, if any of my old ones I had, if any of them were MP3 players by looking at the disc and the plastic case.
Right. No,
CDs. CDs are audio CDs, and they're in the AIF format.
It doesn't matter what format they are. It's not MP3s. Right.
You have to use your Windows Media Player.
Yeah, but I think I looked in there, and there wasn't anything in there about.
Well, look where I told you to look and see if you can pull that down and see if there's MP3s.
Okay, so if you find that, you can take any disc that I got and convert it?
Yes, and it will save it onto your hard drive as MP3 files, which you can then move over to the Kindle.
Well, if that's possible, then I can use my old disc.
Yep.
Okay, then you help me out.
And if that doesn't work, you can download a program like Winamp, WINAMP. Winamp, that does essentially the same thing.
Yeah, I found some programs on the web, but then I also found some people that said don't use third party.
Yeah, don't use them if you don't have to, but if you do, then the one to get is Winamp.
Yeah, but they advise about using third parties to the Kindle book.
Right. Okie doke?
Okay, you told me enough, though, what I needed to know.
There you go. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
It is kind of hard. There's a lot of
MP3 format is sort of the granddaddy of all of the computer digital formats,
mm-hmm.
but there are better formats that have come out since then. One of the big limitations and the big issues with MP3 is it makes really crappy sounding music to audio files. It removes the highs, it removes the lows, and you sort of get sort of a bland in between.
Yep.
So some of the other formats are better. Dolby Labs designed a format called AAC that Apple uses in their iTunes. I think Winamp also does AAC as well. And then Windows Media Audio thinks their format is the best. So it's there's all these different formats, which is confusing. But MP3 is sort of the lowest common denominator.
Right. Ogg is better, certainly, at the higher qualities. And what they're discovering now, of course, is that kids who've grown up with MP3s don't like real music because there's sound.
Too many notes.
Too many notes. Too many notes. All right, our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Just switched to Windows 7,
mm-hmm.
the computer, and I'm having trouble with when I go to a documents and settings issue, and it tells me access denied. Is there any way I can get around that?
Was this a Windows XP machine that you upgraded?
No, brand new machine.
And where when you go to documents and settings, it tells you you can't access documents and settings?
Right. It tells me something, access denied, administrator message type thing.
All right. What it sounds like is you've got two separate logins,
okay.
which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
One is your standard user login. The other is your admin login.
Okay.
So when you are set up as a standard user, it prevents you from doing stupid things like deleting your Windows directory.
Right.
So when you want to do something special, then you need to do it as the administrator.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it two ways. You can log out and then log back in as the administrator and do whatever you got to do.
Okay.
Or I believe if you right, depending on the place and the file, you can right click on it. You get a drop down menu, and one of the choices is run as. And you type in that administrator name and password, and then you can run that program as the administrator. The theory being, it's easier to do that than to have to reboot, but it also reminds you don't do anything stupid.
Sure. Okay.
Okie doke.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's Windows 7 has done a better job, at least, of making that. It's sort of like, for those of you who know Linux and Unix, it's just kind of a sudo sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's a lot better than Windows Vista was, popping up that user access control panel every 5 seconds.
Right, and all that ever did was teach you to, whenever you see anything come up on screen, you click yes.
Yep.
Which is probably not a particularly good idea. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Fred. What's your question?
Good, thank you. Quick question on netbooks. Looking to probably buy one the next few months or so. I'm not sure. I'm wild about the Christmas deals. I saw one. You were talking about prices and loss leaders, and I believe like anything else, you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm. And you pay for what you get.
The one I saw that it was an Acer, which is one of the, in my understanding, one of the better brands out there, but it's running XP. And my thought, if I'm remembering correctly, I'm learning as I go with computers. You guys have been a tremendous help.
Thank you.
That's no longer supported, so I'm buying a machine that right. is the operating system I can't get upgrades to.
Well, yes and no.
And the net is, how important is that? How critical is that?
Yes and no. Yeah. You can still get upgrades on a netbook because Microsoft has come to the realization that Windows 7 is not going to run well on netbooks.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So you can still get support on a netbook.
And there's Service Pack 3 is still supported, right?
And yes. Service Pack 3 is still supported for now. I'm not going to promise okay. it's going to last forever.
So
now, how much...
I'd actually be better off doing that than spending more money getting one with 7 as far as operation.
Well,
is.
You know what? Really, if you're looking at a 1.6 gigahertz processor, which almost all of them are, and if you're looking at only 1 gig of RAM, you definitely want XP.
Okay.
Even at 2 gigs of RAM, you're better off with XP. Actually, of course, you're better off with Linux. I have to say that before all the people okay. in the IRC chat start screaming
I'm
at me.
I'm scratching the surface to learn but, that, so that's beyond me at this point.
But yeah. yeah, absolutely. XP is still supported as much as Microsoft supported it ever. It's
okay.
still supported on netbooks only.
Okay. Well, that's a relief. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
No, thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Have fun. Yeah. There. What?
I don't finish your thoughts.
No, I don't
thought.
Have a thought.
Okay.
I haven't had a thought in years.
As I say to all of our listeners in the Ustream chat, it turns out that the latest Flash Build 102 breaks the Ustream video broadcaster on my Mac. So I had to downgrade my Flash to get Ustream to work, so I'm running unprotected from all the Flash vulnerabilities just so you can watch the Ustream.
Wow, aren't you great? Aren't you just great?
And now, tonight I may try upgrading the operating system because there's an OS patch I haven't loaded yet.
We did have a request in the IRC chat. Can I even find it here anymore? I probably not. The doctor. Nick F., my daughter, a college graduate, wants an ebook reader for Christmas. Could you maybe go over the different types of ebook readers and talk about their pluses and minuses? Probably not all of them, but there are a couple that I've been looking at. Obviously, there's the Kindle from Amazon and the Nook and Nook Color from Barnes & Noble. There's also the Sony makes, well, there's about 100 companies that make them. I can't go through all of them. The big thing is, you know, where are you going to get your books? Almost all of them will let you download books from the Gutenberg Library and places like that for free. And, of course, you can buy from their store. So if you buy a Kindle, you're buying from Amazon. If you buy a Nook, you're buying from Barnes & Noble. So which do you prefer? I don't really care. That's your choice. They all will do MP3 music. There are some very, very nice features in the Nook Color that I've been looking at. It's got a 7-inch screen, 1024 by 600 resolution. It includes, well, it essentially has Android underneath. Now, you don't get the Android market, but because it has Android underneath, there's email, there's web browsing, there's games, there's an MP3, and I believe an OGG player as well. And there are some really nice features in the Nook Color, in the Nook in general, of course, but in particularly in the Color. I can share books with people. So there's a whole little social thing going on. So if you know people and you can become part of their social network, and you can loan them books. And when you loan them a book, it comes up on your desktop with a bar across it that says Lent, or borrowed. I think it says Lent. And for those of us who are Catholics, we get confused. But for the rest of you, what it means is you've loaned that book to somebody, they can have it for 2 weeks, and then it automatically comes back to you. So there are a lot of nice features there. The Kindle itself is very nice. The Kindle has e-ink, which means the battery lasts forever, weeks and weeks and weeks. But page turns are very slow. It's only black and white.
And you need a light to read it with most of the
time.
You
need a light to read it with at night, but during the daylight, it's bright, yeah. Bright, bright.
And at $139, that's kind of the killer price.
Right. And if you get a Nook, the Nooks are about the same price. The Nook Color
is $250.
The Nook itself is cheaper, but the Nook Color is $250. But it has all those other features.
Yeah.
I happen to know personally that Barnes & Noble is feverishly hiring programmers to write more code for the Nook Color so that there's more games and more stuff that it can do.
And then if you move up higher, you get into the iPad, which right. Among all the other things it can do is also a pretty good book reader. And it has Apple's iBook Store on it. And you can put a Kindle app on it and get all your Kindle books from the Kindle store.
And
you can put a Nook app on it and get all your Nook books from the Nook store.
Right, from Barnes & Noble,
The Project Gutenberg, also all the public domain books. So that tends to be sort of the overall does-everything device,
right.
But at a much higher price.
And the Nook Color also reads more formats than most of the others. So there's a lot of research that you can do. And, of course, the Android phones and the Android tablets that will be coming out also have a Kindle app and a Nook app. So you can depend – and so whichever of those two devices at least that you buy, you could start reading a book on one, go read it on the other, go read it back on the first one, go read it on your computer.
It keeps track of what page you're on each device.
Yeah. So it's really – it's actually some very, very neat stuff there. I personally am tending toward the Nook Color, but that's very expensive. I haven't managed to...
The Nook Color has a neat option, and the Nook also, that when you're in a Barnes & Noble, you can read any book you want.
Yeah.
Through the Barnes & Noble Wi-Fi.
I think it's only for an hour a day, though.
Yeah.
I think.
Which, it sort of begs the question, if you go to Barnes & Noble, you could read the physical book.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
But you don't have to. You can sit in a chair and read your electronic book.
Right.
Well, I see a lot of folks, so they'll go in there, go down to their cafe...
Yeah,
get something to drink, and then sit in one of those chairs and just read the book.
Read
never had to buy
life.
It.
Yeah, absolutely right. I used to, many, 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 many years ago.
Is that stealing, though?
I used to work at Worldwide News.
What's a
loss
leader?
And we would see people doing that as well. They'd come in, they sit in the aisles and read the books. And Billy, who worked there, God love Billy. I love Billy. He would sneak up behind people and scream at them, "We sell these here, too, you know!"
Well, see, that's why so many bookstores have started selling coffee. They know you're not going to buy the book, so you might as well buy the coffee.
Right, exactly.
At
right.
$4 a cup or ridiculous.
Yeah,
price.
But then right. That book more or less becomes unreadable if you know people get it and the binding has already been cracked.
Yep. Yeah, someone who wants to buy the book won't buy that copy of it.
Right. So here's what you're going to do if you're going to buy an e-reader. First, think about where you want to buy your books.
Sony comes in pink.
Sony comes in pink. What color you want, of course. Think about what formats you're going to need. Right, because if you're only ever going to buy the books that are coming from whatever store that is, then you don't want to worry about that. But if you want to read PDFs or text files or any of that stuff, then you need maybe the Nook Color because it does all those things and some of the others don't. So you want to be careful of that. Then you look at your price range and make your decision. The Nook Color, because it's a standard color screen, you can read at night, but it doesn't look great in broad daylight, and it doesn't. The battery doesn't last as long as the e-ink readers, which you need a light to read at night, but outdoors looks great. So if you're more a beach person, you're probably not in Rochester, and you can read them, you know, the thing all day long at the beach. But if you're a Rochesterian, you're huddled under the covers all the time, and you might as well get yourself something that has a lit background. All right. But you know what? At this point, I'd take dang near any. Not going to argue with that one way or the other. I'll make it work. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Don't forget, give us a call and let us know what you want for Christmas. You never know when your significant other may be listening, or your family, or your insignificant other. I don't really care. That's your relationship, and I don't want to get in the way. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, we were talking about ebook readers before the break. And that reminded me of this news story. Disposable Nooks and Kindles may one day become as commonplace as throwaway cameras, thanks to a discovery by an engineering professor at the University of Cincinnati, Ohio. Electrical engineering professor Dr. Andrew Steckel discovered that paper is actually similar to glass in host material capability. He used a process called electrowetting, which adds electric fields to color droplets, a variation of the technology behind current e-ink screens. After demonstrating his findings so far, Steckel predicts that the displays on the paper would be fast, full color, and would last the user up to 7 days before needing to be tossed out. Only certain types of paper have proved to work, and the fabrication technique is quite fiddly, but the impact a paper e-reader would have is enormous. Not only would the e-reader be easier to store, it could be folded up and shoved in your pocket, but also cheap and environmentally friendly. If this technology takes off, it could be applied not just to e-books. It could revive the newspaper and magazine scene as well. Steckel is now looking for a commercial investor to develop the device further. If he gets this, expect to see this tech available to consumers in as little as 3 years' time. Would you like a disposable newspaper or book e-reader? And what's the difference between a disposable newspaper e-reader and a newspaper? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Victor did and then stopped doing from around Detroit, New York. There's no point in saying that because he's not here anymore. Call back, and Victor, and we'll chit-chat with you at some other time. I don't know why you hung up. Well, we do love you, Victor. We were not rejecting you as an individual. We were just holding off for a moment in order to read that that news story. But we'll be happy to talk to you if you want to call back. In the meantime, of course, we have Mark from Penfield. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have a 9-year-old son who is totally into computers. And I've been having a hard time trying to find a book or class locally that would be kind of geared towards kids. Would you guys have any recommendations, books or classes or otherwise, that would be good for for a 9-year-old boy to start learning how to use a computer?
Have you checked with the Penfield Town Hall to see if there's any classes going on there? Also, the JCC?
I know there were a lot of summer programs for kids.
Yeah, has some summer classes. Now, a lot of these classes are, I've been finding, and those are good recommendations, have been kind of geared towards, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-olds. So, you know, I don't know if you have, it's kind of an unusual.
Now, are you looking for just pretty much anything?
No, well, you know what, no, not anything. Kind of responsible, you know, learning how to, you know, what not to download as far as, you know, he likes explore the web, and I need to have him kind of understand when I'm not, you know, if I'm not always there watching him, you know, what is suspicious, what are good programs to use to kind of validate, what is a safe website.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're asking. I don't know any program, any books. Wow.
The one organization, and I know this might sound a little weird, but if you were to give them a call, they might be able to help you out. And that's the Missing and Exploited Children Center. Mm-hmm. I know they did have a program there trying to teach kids the proper surfing and everything else. Like you say, being aware of predators and everything else, you know, because they can come on and all of a sudden start being their friends or sending them emails and that type of stuff. So give them a call. They might be able to, you know, put you onto some books or that type of stuff, because I know they did have a program for a while trying to teach kids safe surfing.
Okay, that's great. I will definitely do that.
All right.
All righty.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, every book I know about is either for older or very, very young kids. You know, my first computer crayon book, that sort of fair.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a great idea. Maybe if there isn't a big number of them in that market, I'll write one. Yeah. There you go. Might as well grab the market while it's available. In the meantime, we'll just go back to the phones and talk to Joe from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Hello. I got one question and a response to a caller earlier. The question is, anybody know how to get rid of that pop-up that AVG is doing? It's like a product information pop-up. It happens every once in a while.
Yeah, you buy the thing.
What version are you on?
That makes sense.
What version of AVG?
It's 9.98.
Yeah, they want you to upgrade to version 2010.
Okay, 2010.
Or 2011, rather. 2011.
Is that what the pop-up's asking you to do?
Well,
it looks like it wants you to buy, or you're a buyer. I think it's the one that wants you to buy it, I think.
Well, of course it will, because you don't own it, and so it wants you to buy it.
Yeah, that's,
and that's perfectly
the
legitimate of them to do. I mean, if they're giving you a free program, there you are. But move up to 2010. That may require uninstalling and then reinstalling.
Okay.
But unless and until you buy it, and it's not terribly expensive. And as I always tell people, if you can afford it, do it, because it only encourages them to keep making the program.
That's true. Okay. The other thing is, earlier caller about the documents and settings folder in Windows 7.
Right.
You'll never be able to get into that. That's like a phantom folder. It's kind of like there only for older programs that are looking for the XP format. So what the stuff that he's probably looking for is in the users folder, which contains all the same information that the documents and settings folder has.
There you go.
Oh, he'll never be able to get into that folder.
Good point.
That's for Gary. Thank you.
In general, those folders are something you don't go into anyway.
True.
The Windows uses that as a structure to show you your desktop files, to show you your My Documents files. Same sort of thing on the Mac. You've got your user folder that contains all of your stuff, and that's sort of a single point of backup, which makes it really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, you don't mess in the user folder. You go to your documents folder, you go to your pictures folder separately.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
No, thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Yep, bye.
As I have always said, the thing that I most enjoy about this show is when our users call up and answer each other's questions.
Yeah, help out. It's always a big help.
Here's an interesting story. AirPrint, one of the eagerly anticipated features of Apple's iOS 4.2, Apple's, not the one for Cisco, lets iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch users easily print documents or photos over Wi-Fi to a printer connected to the same LAN as their device without needing to use other software and apps. The catch is that at launch, at least, AirPrint only supports 10 HP printers. You can find the full list on their website, but they're only HP printers, which I guess Apple doesn't make their own printers anymore. Is that what I'm...
No, they haven't in 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't pay any attention to that side of things anymore. There's, you know, they've got some good ones, HP PhotoSmart eStation, which has the 7-inch touchscreen.
If you've seen that commercial with the baby shooting through traffic in a stroller,
yeah,
that's an HP ePrint commercial. Yeah. The basic premise is that you take a picture on your camera and you can electronically print it to your printer back home.
Well, the HP PhotoSmart eStation actually has a removable touchscreen that's Android-based, which is actually kind of cool. You still can't run Android apps on it, but it's Android-based. It's only the HP printers. Apple has said that compatibility will eventually extend to printers from other manufacturers. Until then, I guess you just don't print.
Or you buy another little program, which is only $10, called Printopia.
Right, you need a third-party product.
Which then will let any printer on your network or on your local computer publish itself to the ePrint standard. And basically the bottom line for the iPad users and iPhone users is that you can now print from your device to an ePrint-capable printer.
Right.
Which aren't that many of.
Right, there's only 10. And in fact, it's not every HP printer. I have an HP printer that's not on this list.
It reminds us a lot of Windows 7. In Windows Vista before that, your printer doesn't work with Windows Vista. Buy a new printer.
Yeah, exactly.
So your printer doesn't have ePrint on your iPad.
Windows 7. Yeah. Right. Windows 7, though, is backwards compatible.
Or you buy this Printopia program, and then you can print to any printer.
Right. All right, so...
I haven't tried the trick of putting your iPad on a copier. It doesn't work.
Okay.
So you email the document to your computer and print it from there.
There's something both really innovative and very sad about that. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we would be glad to talk to you just like we're going to talk to Jim from Rochester. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Many times, Box pops up for me to upgrade the Adobe Flash Player, and every time I click on install, it says there's an error. It's royally annoying.
First,
I've gone in and tried to do it manually, and it won't take. I just don't understand. It will not install on my computer.
So you've manually downloaded the Flash installer, and that also doesn't work?
Yes.
What error message do you get?
Well, the latest one said I was not connected to the Internet, that I have to connect to the Internet in order to download it.
Well, that's true.
That is true, but you know, yeah. I'm assuming you actually are connected to the Internet?
Well, yeah, yes.
Here's the question I have, though. Are we sure that's a legitimate error message? In other words, have you gotten caught by one of the older viruses, Trojans, that are trying to get you to download a virus?
With a fake update Flash
with
message.
There were a bunch of those for a while.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself.
So let me suggest you dance the security tango.
I've done that. I've done that many a time.
Since this happened?
I generally do it on a regular basis.
So you've definitely done it since this happened?
Generally. Have you done it lately?
Maybe last week.
It should be okay.
Okay, have you done this since the message started popping up?
Well, see, this has been going on for quite some time.
Okay, all right.
The next suggestion would be to use the Revo uninstaller and try to remove any pieces of Flash that are already installed.
Uh-huh.
Right, that would be a very good idea. RevoUninstaller.com, RevoUninstaller.com.
The latest version of Flash is 10.1.102.64, so you can check to see what version you have if you go to Flash About. It will tell you what version you had. As I mentioned earlier, I had to downgrade to 10.1.85.3 to get Ustream to work.
Right. And it may well be that you've got a version that's so old that it can't upgrade. You have to uninstall and then use the Flash installer. Make sure you go to the Adobe website. Make sure you're in the right place.
Yes. Yep.
And download their real Flash installer and then install it from there.
What was that uninstaller website you said?
Revo, R-E-V-O, uninstaller.com. RevoUninstaller.com.
Okay. I'll try that.
Okie doke.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
And that's back when Adobe decided they were only going to do quarterly updates.
Yeah.
And they've had to update Flash every week and the Adobe Reader just about every week. And
I got to say that the Adobe product, I believe, is the most...
Yeah, I think they beat Microsoft.
I think they have.
Yeah.
They're the most updated
and, the most
and
vulnerable.
Therefore the most vulnerable product on the market today. I've been toying with the idea of absolutely removing Flash from my Linux box.
You can remove the Adobe Reader pretty easily. There's the Foxit Reader for Windows. Apple Preview for the Mac will read PDF files without the Adobe Reader. But Flash is a little tricky. Although
under Linux, not so much. But you're right, under Windows it is.
One of the tricks is that Google Chrome has an internal Flash player. And you can remove the Flash plugins. And sometimes by removing the Flash plugins, the website sees you don't have Flash and will load in H.264, or it will load the HTML equivalent.
Right.
And with Google Chrome, you can actually play Flash without having an external Flash plugin loaded.
Right.
That came out a couple of weeks ago when testing of the new MacBook Air showed that having Flash installed drained the battery 2 hours faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and
but if you don't install it and you have Chrome installed,
you can use the use Chrome for Flash viewing.
Right. I guess I've never been a fan of Flash to begin with. Although, those of you who insist on having Flash stuff on your website.
Flash is the main website. So all I see is a little blue triangle or square when I go to your website.
Those
don't
of you who insist on having that should be happy to know that just this last couple of weeks, Google announced that they're finally, able to index Flash. So all those of you who have never, ever been able to get onto any Google...
they shouldn't have done that, because then we could get rid of Flash
sooner.
Well,
exactly! But oh well. Listen, we're going to take a break. Just because we're tired of talking about Flash. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites wish you a happy holiday season.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bruce from SOTUS, New York. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Oh, I appreciate you guys. You cover the ballpark as far as what people know and don't know. I appreciated you had a talker a couple of minutes ago from Newark, and he's probably a little bit beyond my level even. So I'm way down there. I've been I just overheard you say that you can log in as either a user or as an administrator. Now, that just triggered a whole bunch of things because it was like I practically only use email, and I can't use anything else because it always says all sorts of reasons why I can't. And if I put in a CD or put in anything, it'll tell me that... I don't have authorization or one thing or another for downloading the information that's on these that are old CDs that I've had to record things from my business and all. Right. I can't get anything.
Thing you can do, Bruce, though, on those type of things when it says, you know, it won't let you do it, is if you right-click on it, you know, the application, I believe with Windows 7, you can sit there and say, run it as administrator.
Yeah, you can. You can say run as. But are you in Windows 7?
Well, let's see. I used to use a MacBook laptop, and then that one kind of died. And then so I got a Dell, some kind of a Dell.
And what operating system are you running in it?
I have no idea. Where would you find that information? So you're talking, you know, way back here.
All right.
If you click on the start menu in the bottom left corner, it will usually say on the side of that start menu what operating system you're running.
Okay.
That's one way to look.
Let's see.
If you just got the machine,
it says Internet Explorer, Windows Live, HP Solutions Center.
To the left of that list, not that list itself.
That's clear up against the wall there on the left.
Okay, so there's no writing that goes up and down the side that says something like Windows XP.
You must have that turned
no,
off.
No, probably not.
Yeah. So if you right-click on my computer and choose properties, that will...
Hang on. You said if I right-click.
Mm-hmm.
On my computer. If you open up the start menu.
Yep.
One of your choices there is my computer.
Probably. Let me get rid of what I got here. I'm sorry. You can't wait while I go through all this.
Well, one of the choices will be my computer.
Okay.
And if you right-click on that and select Properties from the drop-down menu, you'll bring up a whole bunch of interesting stuff. Don't muck about with any of it, but one of the things that it will tell you right on that first screen is what version of Windows you're running.
Let's say this. Okay, so I start the computer, and I put in my password, and a bunch of things come up. Across the top is E, and then there's an envelope, and then there's a bunch of things across the top. Is it those guys, or is it the lower right-hand corner where there's a bunch of tiny little things?
No, where you want to do, you mean where is my computer? Is that what you're asking me?
I was happy knowing that I can log in some way or other. I can log in either as a user or as an administrator because I...
Well, if you're using Windows 7... When you right-click on any one of your icons,
uh-huh,
like for email or whatever.
Like Google, click,
sure.
L-I-C-K?
Yep, Google, like Google. If you right-click on that icon,
really,
you get a drop-down menu, and one of the choices will be run as.
Okay.
And you can run it as an administrator. So for those programs that tell you you're not authorized,
uh-huh,
those are the ones, just randomly right-click on stuff because suddenly you think your email's disappeared because you're running as a different person and there's no email there.
Perfect. Yeah.
So don't do those. But on any of those programs where they won't let you run because you don't have the authorization,
yes,
you can right-click on those and say run as, and then you can run as your administrator.
Run as. And in that thing that says run as, I'll have a choice. It'll ask me administrator, or will I type in administrator, I wonder?
Well, it depends on a lot of things.
Okay.
You may have a different username and password. It may just say run as administrator. It depends on a lot of things there.
Okay. All right. I'm to the next stage.
Yeah, the
Thank
administrator
you.
Is a higher level user that can do more things.
Yeah,
but it can
disappear
do
things too. I understood.
Yeah, it can do dangerous things. So that's why most of the time you want to be running as a regular user.
Okay. Before my what did I have a 10.5 Mac laptop. Before that died, after it died, I took it in and they gave me supposedly they downloaded all the stuff. Onto a disk. I took the disk, and of course, I can't download any. I can't get that. But that's probably because I'm trying to put it into a Dell or something.
Unfortunately, the deal is Windows and the Mac use different formats for their disks.
Of course,
the Mac can read Windows, but Windows can't read the Mac. So if in fact
was it a CD or a hard drive that they gave you?
They gave me a hard drive.
Yeah. If it's a CDs, use the same CDFS.
Right, but if they gave you a drive of some sort or a thumb drive or one of those things.
This was a thumb drive thing.
Yeah, then it's very possible that it was not formatted to be readable by both, but only by the Mac.
The Mac. Did they know you were going to a PC?
No, because I didn't right away. I went to a Mac, and I couldn't download that either.
One of the things you can do is bring it to a reputable Mac dealer, like, let me think off the top of my head,
I got one. Yep,
Mac
I got
F.
One.
There's a possibility. And you can, I'm sure they'll charge you a few bucks, but that's fair.
Okay.
They can pull that stuff into a Mac, reformat the thumb drive to be readable by both a Windows and a Mac machine, put all your data back.
Wow. All right.
There you go.
Some hope, because my whole, I got about 15 years of my life on that.
Well, the next problem is, what program did you use to create those files?
Let's jump off one bridge at a time, shall we?
Yeah, if you used a cross-platform program like Microsoft Word, it won't be a problem.
That's what I used.
There you go. When you go in, you should be able to talk to them about that, and they should be able to see what kind of files they are.
Okay. That takes care of that whole lifetime worth of stuff.
There you go.
That goes that way. Okay. Hey, thanks a whole lot. I just keep you on the radio, and when there's something I'm starting to understand, I just turn it up, and you guys are great. Thank you.
Call us anytime, Bruce. Thanks.
Okay.
That is one of the real problems that people have, is the incompatibility from computer to computer and program to program.
And it doesn't necessarily mean Mac to Windows. If I had a PC running multi-plan, which I did at one point, and I get a new PC with Excel, I can't read my old documents.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that people are going to, a lot of times people are going to web-based products like Google Docs or Windows Live or one of those things,
and
because no matter where you are, you can get at your stuff and it's always going to be available to you.
And Microsoft Office has sort of become the de facto standard, but if you wait too long, there's a problem there. We've had customers that have had Word version 1 from 20 years ago, and it won't work in Word version 12 today.
What I have found interesting is that almost always OpenOffice will read all of those formats, and then you can convert to the other one. All right, our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. I have a MacBook Pro running 10.5.2. I seem to have a problem with the battery. That is, it's not plugged in, the battery says it has enough juice in it. It's fully powered, but it powers down after a short time. It's been getting shorter and shorter progressively, as if the battery were dead.
It is dead, yeah. How old is the battery?
The computer's about 2 years old.
And it's the original battery?
Yes.
That's probably dead. It's worn out.
Yeah.
Even though the power settings say that it's fully charged.
It is fully charged, and fully charged is an hour of time.
Right. In this particular case, what happens is, as the batteries get older, fully charged means less and less time. So nobody's lying to you. It's just that the battery's old.
Okay.
If you replace the battery, you'll start getting that 4 or 5 hour charge again.
If you go into your system profiler, you can see how many cycles are on the battery. And generally speaking, the batteries get maybe 300 cycles in their lifetime. The new batteries that Apple is designing into the latest laptops can be recharged for 1,000 cycles, which they estimate is about 5 years. But in the older batteries, if you got a couple of years out of them, that was normal.
Okay, and where would I find the system profiler?
In the utilities menu or in the Apple menu under About This Mac.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
There you go.
Bye.
Have fun.
Yeah, so that 5 hours when the battery is new, fully charged, quickly becomes 5 minutes when the battery is fully charged after a couple of years.
Yeah, I'm actually having that problem with one of the Macs at our work, and I'm trying to convince the guy all you have to do. It's his machine. It's his personal machine.
Yeah.
And we don't really support them on their personal machines. But I've tried to tell him, all you got to do is replace the battery. I don't know what miracle he expects, but that's the answer I'm giving him every time he asks. Just replace the battery. That's all there is to it. All right. Our next caller is Dave from Bloomfield, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a Dell laptop, kind of a low-end Vostro laptop. Been running pretty well for me. I'm using Windows XP. I dance the tango regularly to keep it clean. And just within the last week or two, there's a delay when I type in the letters before they show up on the screen. And it happens with Word. It happens on the Internet. It's very aggravating because there's like a some kind of delay. And I don't know whether it's a bug or is it a driver problem. I've tried to work through Microsoft troubleshooting, but I can't seem to locate where the problem is.
What did you say, Dave? I'm sorry, Dave's gone away.
Keystroker logger.
That's what I'm talking about.
There's a couple of possibilities here. Are you the only person who uses this machine?
No, unfortunately, it's a shared family unit, so...
So you got one of two things going on. Either someone's installed a keystroke logger.
Accidentally, probably.
Probably accidentally. I'm sure they didn't do it on purpose.
And the Tango wouldn't pick that up?
Well, now here's the other thing. If you've got multiple people using it, do they all have their own IDs?
Oh, yes.
Then you need to dance the Tango in each of those IDs.
Okay, so me running it as the administrator isn't good enough.
Not necessarily, not under XP.
Okay. That's what I need to do.
Yep.
Yep.
It doesn't sound like a driver problem. My other question was, should I be going after looking at somehow re-downloading drivers? It sounds
no, I'd start with that because
okay.
It's very possible that somebody got caught by something.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Good luck, Dave.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
You solve that problem by making sure nobody else ever uses your computer ever, 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 and get your own dang computer.
Yeah.
It's but it is that's the other part of the problem with something like the Tango. To be absolutely sure it's running properly, you need to run it in every user's as every user. So on some machines that multiplies the time it takes by 3 or 4 or 5. But it's the only way to be sure. It's not like on a Mac or on Linux when you can be the administrator and you can get everywhere. There are just things you can't get at unless you are that person. Windows is designed a little differently. All right, our next caller is Ed from Ithaca again. Ed, we've missed you, and clearly you've missed us.
Yes, indeed. I just called you about the battery on the Mac.
Yep.
And I checked, and it has had 46 cycles.
So it's probably a defective battery.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, you waited too long. Maybe not. The Mac has a 1-year standard warranty, so it's out of warranty in that respect. Did you purchase the extended warranty?
I'm not sure. My wife bought it.
So if you've purchased the extended warranty, it may be covered under that extended warranty.
Okay.
Generally speaking, the batteries are a consumable item, and the warranty is good for you a year. But since that you've got that few cycles on it, it's possible that it could be replaced under warranty.
Okay.
If you take it into the Apple Store or even our shop in Victor, we have a battery tester that we can run to see if the battery is defective or just consumed.
All righty. Okay, well, thanks for your help.
Sure.
Okay, good luck. Please call us again.
It's kind of like it's kind of like the tires on a car. The tires are consumable. They wear out, and you know if you wear them out, it's not covered by the warranty.
Right, right, right. And
but
so,
if they're defective,
right,
then
right,
it is. Yeah.
Right, right, right. And people don't seem to get that. You know, if you say to somebody, well, my tires are only a year and a half old. Yeah, but it's a bad tire. Bad tires happen.
Yeah, if you got 50,000 miles on it, you wore it out.
Yeah, right, right, right. And, yeah. But they don't believe that about batteries. You know,
yeah.
The magic things in the computer should last forever.
Yep.
But it's not true. They're just devices like everything else is just a device. And so sometimes they need to be changed. It's just the way it works. Like I said, I've got a guy with a Mac at work, and with things like this laptop, I try to drain the battery regularly and charge it back up again. But it's still not going to last 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. It's going to last a few years.
That's one point in favor of keeping it plugged in all the time, so you never run any cycles on it.
That's true.
But then you should cycle it every month or so you
right.
keep the chemistry working.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Kind of what I do. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You continue, for some unknown reason, to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Now, see, now I'm in that Christmas spirit.
Why?
Because it's after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
When it's okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Today, I went to the last Friday. I went to the Straight No Chaser concert. They're an a cappella group, and they're just high energy, high energy, great music. And to me, there's nothing more beautiful than the human voice in close harmony. These guys are phenomenal. Mm. And so I bought their double Christmas album at the thing, mm-hmm. and I was playing it, and I wasn't going to play it. They did some Christmas music, but not a lot.
Okay.
And I bought their double Christmas album, but I have not played it till today.
Good.
Because it's not Christmas until after Thanksgiving. But I played it on the way here, and I was just bebopping along. I loved it. Oh, golly, I loved it. So that's my new Christmas music for my car.
Cool.
And it's a double album. So I ripped it all to MP3s because I have an MP3 player. Because mm-hmm. I just got the one CD in there, and it'll just now play for a couple hours before it repeats. So I'm very excited. but it's all right. It is all right to play music now and to talk about Christmas, to talk about the holidays in general, because Thanksgiving is over,
mm-hmm.
and we can move on now.
And you two gentlemen got plenty of turkey, I take it?
We don't have as much as you might think, because we had a lot of family for Thanksgiving. How about you?
Good. No, it was very good. Down in my sister's. She's down on Canisius Lake, and I just love it down there.
Sure.
You know, I just sit back and...
I like Canisius Lake more in the summer than in the winter.
Yeah, but it's still very...
Well, it's beautiful down
the
there.
The stillness and the quiet. You know what I mean? Yeah, you get down there in the summer months are great, you know, all the activities going on and everything else, but there's something to be said, you know, just to go out on the dock. I mean, it was cold out there, but just to go out there and just look around in the stillness and the quiet and just, you know, enjoy it. I mean, it was great, you know, and down there with family, you know, and it was a great time, a very good time.
Good. Yep. You had, you have, what, 8 turkeys, 9 turkeys?
Yeah. Too many different Thanksgiving dinners with the different friends and family.
Right.
Well, that used to be the thing. I mean, back, you know, just a couple of years ago, that was the thing at my house. You know, I'd sit there and I'd do the turkey, one turkey the night before, and then one that following day. Because, like folks know, I come from a very large family. I'm 1 of 6. My dad's 1 of 19. You know, we get a lot of the folks stopping in and everything else. And it's just the way it always was. I mean, this is always a special time of the year for me. Because back in the day, when I was growing up as a kid, my parents used to have to rent a hall. As a matter of fact, it was the Polish Falcon Club. And it was an all-day event. When we went for Thanksgiving, they rented the hall. And it was like an eat-a-fest all day, because on one wall there would be all...
Well, with your family, by the time you said hello to everybody, it was Tuesday.
Close to it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what was weird, though? Someone would actually call there and say, is there a Mr. N right there? yeah, which one?
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, no, it was
and
always...
And the problem is there's got to be more than one Dave or more than one Joe or, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it was always a great time. And, matter of fact, there was a couple times the family got written up in the paper, you know, for because my grandmother and them would go there and start cooking the turkeys. I mean, mm-hmm. you're talking, you know, 12 to 14 turkeys.
Right.
And then all the pies and the hams and everything else. And my grandfather, God bless his soul, while he was alive... He would go right over there, get over there at a certain time, and start cutting it all up. And that man could sit there and carve a turkey up so neat and clean. You know, we'd sit there as kids, trying to look over the counter and try to sneak a little bit. He'd let some fall every so often.
Sure,
to
yeah,
us
right.
And what are your kids doing here? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
You didn't want to stab him. But, no, he'd clean those right down to the bone. Like, Grandpa, you didn't leave much on the bone. Yeah, it's for us to eat later.
Right.
But, it was a lot of great food.
All right, well, back to the phones. Give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Norman did from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Norman. What's your question?
Hi guys. You probably answered this question once upon a time, but I'm going to ask anyhow. Office 2010, I'd like to load that over or install it over Office 2003.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And can I keep both of the programs?
Yes. What you can do, though, is you're going to have to tell it when it goes through the setup,
uh-huh.
It's going to, by default, want to overwrite, you know, like you said, the older version. You can say no and have it put it in a separate directory.
Okay.
Okay. As a matter of fact, shorten it up. Instead of going under, say, C:\Programs\Office2010, just shorten it up to do C:\Office2010.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That sounds simple enough.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
And you don't run into trouble with DLLs and stuff like that? Pretty nice. Pretty nice deal. You do need to be careful in general of that, because a lot of programs share DLLs and will replace DLLs. So apparently they're doing it right, which is not all. Yeah, it's pretty shocking. In Office, so that's good to know. Make sure that you're careful, though.
It probably means they have multiple versions of the same DLL.
Right, right. So you're going to fill up your hard drive, but nowadays, how big are hard drives? Right? What's the big deal? All right, our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question about Windows XP. It seems that years ago, I was able to do like a selective startup using msconfig.
Right.
Okay. And for some reason, like all the selections to be able to turn off individual things when my computer first starts up, it seems like it's just the selection just isn't there as plentiful as it was last time I tried it. This is probably a couple of years ago that I even tried it, and I know you're supposed to sign on as an administrator, but I only have one sign on from my computer.
Under XP, almost everybody automatically signs as an administrator. That's one of the problems with XP. But it may well be that you had some choices of programs that you've removed, or honestly, it may well be you're simply remembering it wrong. But usually there's four tabs. And
General boot, services, startup tools.
Right. And so you may be looking under a different tab. Because generally, services will have many more things in it than say, boot up.
All right. So if you could, just taking it from the top, could you give me an idea how I would get to that then?
Well, it's you know how to get into msconfig, right?
Yeah.
When that window comes up, there's tabs, five tabs.
Right.
And you just click on those tabs just as you would in any other program with tabs. And then each of those will actually have a kind of a different screen.
Right.
And then that will show you different things. So there's a lot of different things. They're just not all on the first tab.
So the services tab will have a lot of different services in it. The startup tab has a lot of different startup items in it.
Well, that's just that the startup items, it seems like it. Seems like it only has like I don't know, six or seven to choose from, and it's just not a long list like I used to remember it.
You must have uninstalled the programs that are in the startup folder,
right? You either uninstall those programs or you remember a different tab. The reality is that almost most computers don't start up more than a half a dozen programs. Not from the startup tab. They start up a lot of internal programs that you'll find under processes under the task manager, but that's different from startup programs.
Okay.
So it's unlikely that things have changed that way. I mean, frankly, anything that generally starts up inside Windows is either something you use regularly or something that the system can't live without. So if it stopped starting up, you would either notice it or your machine wouldn't run.
Okay. So I probably just shouldn't mess with it then.
No, you shouldn't.
Okay.
Okie doke.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
There is an option, if I remember right, under services to hide non-Microsoft services. Or no, hide Microsoft services.
Right.
So the 100 Microsoft services are all hidden, so you may only get the 10 non-Microsoft services.
Right.
So he might have had that option turned on.
Right. That's a possibility. So that's possible, too. All right. Our next caller is Mike from Livonia, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Oh, thanks for getting me on quick. A caller earlier I was listening to may have touched on similar problem. I'm not sure exactly, but I have the family computer and the kids play the online games, and my son has, you know,
the right-hand finger on the up and down arrow keys a million miles an hour. And now there seems to be like a hesitation in how the whole system runs, whether it's the mouse scrolling, whether it's a music file.
Well, again, yeah, you're probably in the same place. The thing you've got is likely to be that you've gotten, particularly when kids play games, one of them has downloaded something they shouldn't. And it could have happened in the background. They might not have done it on purpose, right?
Oh, I know that. They're just too busy killing zombies.
You know? Right. You need to dance the security tango, and you need to dance it in every one of your logins.
Now, this dance tango thing, I've never heard of that.
Okay. You go to securitytango.com.
Right.
Click on the Let's Dance button.
Gotcha.
You'll find a choice of different operating systems. You want the Windows Waltz. Print that page out, and then follow it step by step, checking off everything as you go.
It's basically a list of instructions on how to clean the computer of malware and viruses and Trojans, and we just recorded it down in a nice list to make it easier to follow.
Right, and you're going to have to do that, and it takes a while, depending on the size of your hard drive and the speed of your machine.
A buddy of mine has told me about doing a boot scan when I download Avast, and it goes into like the...
That's,
you know,
helpful, but
and it takes like an hour and a half.
And, yep,
and that's only viruses,
right?
But okay,
there none of these programs will catch everything unless you're logged in as that user. It's just the way Microsoft designed their software, and there's not much you can do about it.
Except at securitytango.com.
Securitytango.com.
All right. I mean, I can, you know, once I get there, I can pretty much probably follow instructions.
Right, click on the Let's Dance button.
It's like a hesitation, so it's not a hardware problem, like he beat the heck out of the keys too much and now it's just not going to work anymore?
It's certainly a possibility, but it's less likely, particularly if the mouse also has the problem. And
is it every key or just some of the keys?
It's. I mean, we tried playing Pandora, and every song is...
Yeah, you got something running in the background.
It hesitates, and it's...
Yes, you've got something running in the background, clearly taking up all your cycles. You need to clean that machine out.
Right, right. Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a problem we're seeing more and more often as time goes on, particularly as people are playing lots of the newer games, particularly as they're playing on places like Facebook, where security is exactly non-existent. We're seeing more and more of this stuff go on, and you have to be more and more careful as to what you do and where you go. All right, that music in the background tells me that you have wasted two more hours of your life listening to us. I don't know why you don't wise up, but you just keep coming back for more, and we appreciate it. So we want to thank everybody who called in. We want to apologize to all of those to whom we did not get next week. Call in more earlier and more often, and we'll be happy to talk to you. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. It is 55 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.